Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Beach Academy podcast. Today, we have the community scientist, sea slug photographer, Luann Roberts, joining us as our guest. Luann is a dog fowler and a tide pooler, and in her spare time, she enjoys discovering and taking photos of sea slugs and other tiny marine organisms. Hi, Luann. Thank you so much for accepting my invitation and for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great, and thank you so much for having me today.
All right. So we just want to know a little bit more. So just tell us about yourself and the dog fouling and the tide pooling you do.
Sure. So I am 35 years old. I live in Seattle and I have a full-time job working at the grocery store. But in my spare time, I have a passion for going out and exploring the accessible marine environment around me. And most of the time that means dock fouling, but I also do some tide pooling when the tides are low enough. But dock fouling is an activity where you go out to floating docks and you lay flat on the top of them and you look over the edge and look at the marine organisms that collect on the side of these docks. And tide pooling, you're exploring similar kinds of environments. You're looking at the organisms that are exposed when the tide recedes. So you're seeing similar kinds of creatures, but in a very different kind of setting. And in a lot of my free time, I go out and explore these environments and photograph what I see and try and share it with my community.
Nice. So is there a big community of people doing this type of duck fouling and tide pooling?
Tide pooling has been around for who knows how long. Tide pooling has always been an activity that people have gone and done. Dock fouling is something that people have done, but hasn't really been treated the same way as tide pooling, as a hobby where you regularly go out and see what there is to explore. But over the past couple of years, as I've been sharing the images of the creatures that I find, I've been taking out more and more people, and they've started doing it on their own. And while there wasn't really anybody out around Seattle doing it, now there's, I would say, at least a dozen people who go out regularly.
Oh, wow. Cool. So how did you become interested in doing this type of dog fouling and tide pooling and looking at these sea slugs?
Originally, when I came to Seattle, I wasn't familiar at all with tide pooling, but I would spend a lot of time just sat by the sound reading a book. And I was reading a book that talked about a biologist who did tide pooling, and I became interested in what that meant. So I started to go down to the shore and noticing when I would see the creatures down there. And I would see sea stars and anemones and things that I had never experienced before. And at the same time, I had started pursuing a master's of arts in biology. And what I was doing with my degree is I really wanted to focus on bringing my community to nature. And tide pooling seemed like such an exciting way to get people to connect to their environment. Because in Seattle, you have a lot of parks that contain public beaches. So you have this great opportunity to see these creatures. And it was during the summer of the first year of the pandemic, I had a trip planned to Borneo to study orangutans as part of my degree, but everything got canceled. Mm-hmm. So instead, I really started focusing on the tide pooling and really just went hard on that. And I spent that whole summer going up and down the coast, looking at tide pools and taking photographs and sharing them online. And I wasn't really particularly interested in sea slugs at that point. Sea slugs are one of the many creatures you see in tide pools, but they don't look like very much. They're very, when they're out of the water, they don't move much. You can't see their shape. They're kind of droopy and they just look like little blobs. So I would see them tide pooling, but not really pay that much attention. But while I was starting to share some of my images from tide pooling, I was noticing other people's images of sea slugs, and they had these amazing forms and bright colors. And along with these photos, there was this term I was unfamiliar with, and it was dock fouling. So I was interested, like, what do these sea slugs have to do with this word dock fouling? And when I looked it up, I found out that dock fouling is just the organisms that collect on man-made structures that are left submerged in the water. And the people who were taking these amazing photos, they were laying on these docks and just looking over the edge with an underwater camera. So on one of my tide pooling trips, I met up with one of these people, Cricket Raspit, out in California, and she showed me the techniques of finding sea slugs through what we started calling the activity of dock fouling. And when I came back to Seattle, I started to kind of look into it and see if anybody was doing it out in this area. And I couldn't find any evidence that people were really looking at the environment this way. So I just started to try and figure it out on my own out here and just look at maps and find places where there were floating docks and then go out to the docks and see what I could find. And I just started sharing lots of photos from that.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So what exactly are these sea slugs?
Sea slugs refers to a broad group of creatures. And basically, sea slugs are shellless marine mollusks. So they're similar to land slugs, but they evolved from a marine snail instead of a land snail. And what I look at for the most part are nudibranchs, which are a type of sea slug. And these are very often brightly colored creatures that can range from a couple of millimeters to up to 20 centimeters. They can get quite large, about a foot long. Wow. So they vary in size, they have different forms, and they're almost exclusively predators. So they prey on other marine creatures, typically sessile or stationary organisms that are on the side of the dock, such as anemones, hydroids, or bryozoa. And sea slugs refers to more than just nudibranchs. And included in sea slugs, you have other types of organisms, such as sapsuckers, which are a type of sea slug. And instead of preying on other animals, they have a specialized tooth. So when they are on algae, they can penetrate the cell wall of algae and suck out the contents. And that's their food. And then you get also other kinds of sea slug organisms, like head shield slugs, which can swim around freely. So they're a type of sea slug that actually moves around in the water. They don't stay adhered to the side of anything, but you don't typically see those dock fouling.
So when you see them in the water, they have like a lot of, you're saying, bright colors and everything. When they come out of the water, you don't see those colors? Or you still see a little bit? Or
you see a little bit, but the colors really pop with how the light kind of reflects through the water and shines off the organism. And you lose a lot of that when they come out of the water. So you might, if you see one out of the water, you might have some idea that of what the colors are. But for the most part, it's a lot harder to tell.
A lot harder to see when they are out. So what do they usually eat? You're saying they're predators?
It depends on the species. They're very specific about their diets for the most part. And there isn't necessarily a lot of research into the specifics of what nudibranchs eat. But they mostly eat these sessile organisms, such as bryozoa or hydroid. And a hydroid is related to a jellyfish. And when you look at them, they might just look like a plant when you look in the water. But if you look really close, you can see tiny tentacles that kind of give away its connection to a jellyfish. And they have an ability to sting and just like anemones. And the nudibranchs that prey on them, they're immune to these stinging cells. So they can eat these organisms without coming to any harm.
So what is that main difference between the sea slugs and the nudibranchs? So all the sea slugs are nudibranchs? No, or?
So all of the nudibranchs are sea slugs. Slugs is the much broader term that contains all of these kind of organisms.
How many species of sea slugs are they known, or there's too many? Or
There are many thousands. We definitely don't know how many species there are of sea slugs. They're still species being described all the time, but it's in the thousands for sure.
Wow. And have you discovered, why are they so important to the ecosystem? And are they, part of the marine ecosystem? What is their importance there?
I don't know that there's been much research into what exactly the function is that they perform, but they do seem to do a few different interesting things. They're definitely more towards the top of the food chain, where they don't really have other creatures that prey on them. But they certainly regulate the populations of these other organisms that they're consuming. I've definitely observed it myself, where I could see giant patches of anemones that have been completely chewed through by sea slugs. And I'm not sure exactly how that impacts the ecosystem as a whole, but you can definitely see that they are an essential part of it.
Right. Maybe they are food to other mollusks also.
For mostly it's other nudibranchs that are eating nudibranchs.
Okay.
But I don't think so much as a food, more if they're getting into fights or something like that.
Oh, okay. Just for, not for like survival, but just, well, for fighting then.
Yeah.
So do they have a shell?
When they are in their larval form, they have kind of a residual shell. But as they become full slugs, that shell disappears. Some of the sea slugs, like the head shield slugs, they have internal shells that are very small. But for the most part, you're not going to see a nudibranch with a shell.
And do you have a favorite nudibranch?
I don't have a favorite. Typically, I have a favorite of the moment, which is if I just saw something for the first time, that usually becomes my new favorite until I see something else new.
So how do you label them, or you just like when you see them, you know what they are? Do you research them, or how do you identify them, or do you just...
For the most part, I rely on iNaturalist, and iNaturalist is a website where you can upload photos of observations you make of organisms, and then members of the community help you verify what species it is. And I upload all of my observations there first, but one of the greatest resources that I've come to rely upon is the online community of nudibranch enthusiasts, because a lot of the information that I found in books and online is outdated. There's not a lot of current publications with the latest research. So if I'm struggling to find an identification for something, I'll ask people online to help me find the right thing. And it's great to have such a community of citizen scientists and scientists that you can kind of confer with.
So all of that is in that website, in iNaturalist school, or what's the name?
iNaturalist is the website that you can use for any type of organism identification. If I can't find an identification there, I'll put my image on Instagram and see who can help me figure it out.
Is there like a Facebook group as well, or is just Instagram and website?
I only really use Instagram. There might be Facebook groups out there, but I've made most of the connections for this community on Instagram.
So you have you mostly done dog fouling and tie pooling in the Pacific, in the West Coast, or have you explored the East Coast yet?
I have not explored the East Coast. And the community of dock fowlers on Instagram, there's Emily, the marine biologist, that's her Instagram name. She's on the East Coast, and she started taking photos of creatures that she finds under the floating docks there. So I'm not too sure what kind of creatures she's going to find or how easy it's going to be on the East Coast. But I think if more people out there became interested, we would learn a lot about the creatures that live out there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's probably not much interest yet, but I think, I mean, it's pretty interesting, and a lot of people probably get into it. I mean, I know a lot of people are into seashelling here. I mean, collecting seashells. I mean, they are bigger, and like you can actually take them home when they are empty. So I think that's probably different than a sea slug that you can really not take home, but you can still take the photo, and they look really, really cool. What type of camera do you use? What type of equipment do you take, or what do you use?
My camera is an Olympus TG6, which is just a small point and shoot camera that has an underwater macro mode. And I'm no camera expert. I wouldn't really even consider myself to be a photographer, but I do know how to use this camera in this specific way. And it works great for small underwater photos. Beyond the camera, typically when I go out, I try and wear some clothing that I don't mind getting really gross, because when you're laying on top of the docks, there's a lot of seal poop and bird poop, and there's bits of shell. So you get really filthy sometimes. And I typically have knee pads because you're kneeling up and down a lot. And sometimes I'll have a stick. So if there's things that dangle off the side of the dock, such as blades of kelp, just having a stick to gently move them up towards you so you can take a look at what's living there, that helps out as well.
I also noticed in some of the photos that you have a personal scale on your finger, right?
Right. So on my left hand, I have a millimeter ruler on my index finger and thumb. And it's not really for scientific purposes because it's never going to be super accurate. But one problem I felt like I was having was conveying the scale of the creatures in my photos. And I think having that ruler there kind of helps people with another visual cue to see how tiny some of these creatures are.
Right, right. Yeah, and I'm seeing on the photos also your nails that are pretty well done, and then you can see the difference in the scale of how small is the organisms that you're taking the photos of. I think that's a great idea, the tattoo on your left finger. So which one is your favorite? I mean, I guess beach or nature spot that you can kind of recommend for our listeners to visit. When they are around the West Coast to explore, and why is it your favorite?
The place that I like to recommend the most is Bremerton Marina. And I think it's one of the best places for people who are new to these kinds of activities to go, because not only is it a big public, clean dock, but it's a very protected area along the Sound. And that means that there's a lot of creatures that grow on the side of those docks, and they're really easy to see. And if it's your first time going out to look for these creatures, it's going to be very hard to find a tiny sea slug. But if you go out there, you can see big anemones, you can see crabs, and you can kind of start to orient yourself to what the landscape looks like and become more familiar with it. And there's just such an abundance of life there. And I really also want to encourage people to look for wildlife in an urban environment. The marina is right there in the city, and that's something that they can get to very easily if you live in a city. And I don't know that most people are aware of that. And I think they might find it exciting to know about all the creatures that just live on their doorstep.
Right, right. I mean, do you get a lot of questions? Like when you're there, just laying there on the dock? I'm sure that what people think about it, I don't...
Well, yeah, I get a lot of, did you lose something? What are you looking for? Don't fall in. People like to say that a lot. Some people are genuinely interested, but most of the time they think I've lost something, or that maybe I might be drunk and laying on a dock.
That's funny. But I mean, you don't get in troubles for that or anything. I mean, you're just looking for wildlife. And right. That's a public dock, right? I mean, that's a marina, so it's anybody can just go there. It's kind of like go fishing or something, right?
Exactly. And I think it is important to remember that when you are on a marina, you're next to people's boats, which are often their homes or something that they've invested a lot of money in. So I think it's important that even if you're allowed to be in a place, that you're respectful of the people who live there. But I've never had an adverse reaction to anybody who's encountered me dock fouling. If you just try and be respectful and stay out of people's way and don't trespass onto private property, then there's no reason.
That's important, not trespassing, because you see a lot of private docks. But those are private.
Exactly. Don't go past the lock gate. You know, it's usually pretty obvious.
Right, right. And do you encounter a lot of also trash? I mean, a lot of trash around that area of the docks or things like that? Or
it kind of varies. It seems like you might get little piles of trash that get swept in when there's a big rain. But one thing that I find is interesting is that it doesn't take long for trash to become taken over by marine organisms. The other day I was at Bremerton Marina and I saw something floating in the water, and it was a old beer bottle, and the whole thing was covered in anemones. I could just only pick it up by the top, and there were anemones 360 degrees around it. So certainly trash is no good for the marine environment, but it's also interesting to see how it adapts to how the organisms adapt to having these things in their environment.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that's very interesting. So you said you're taking people now? You're taking like people on tours to go dock fouling, or how does that work now?
Usually people just reach out to me through Instagram and say that they're interested, and I try and take people out usually just one at a time and show them, because I think it would be challenging in a group setting. I think it would be fun, but you're looking at something very small. So it's useful to be able to get up close with just one other person and show them. I've certainly had small little events where I've had groups of people come out and do it together, but I've never done anything really formal with it like that.
Nothing like so big. But I'll think probably with tide pooling will be easier, right?
Tide pooling, there's a lot of established things in place for people who want to do tide pooling. I also volunteer with the Seattle Aquarium, and they have a beach naturalist program where they have people who are on beaches during low tides to help facilitate that experience.
Of tide pooling in right there in Seattle area?
Yep, that's right in the city.
But you said tide pooling also in California. You have gone to San Francisco to do that, or?
Not so much in the city of San Francisco, but all up and down the West Coast. I've gone basically all the way to the Bay Area and tide pooled all up and down there. Next month, I'll link up the missing pieces, and I'm going to do a road trip from the Bay Area down to San Diego and hit a different tide pool location every day.
Oh, nice. Wow. When is that happening?
It'll be the low tides in July. So from July 9th to about July 16th, there's a really good patch of low tides.
Oh, nice. Nice, nice, nice. Yeah, I guess you have to schedule it with the tides. Then
exactly.
What application or what do you use to track the tides?
I just use an app called Tides Near Me, which only really gives you about a week out. But I usually sit down at the beginning of the year and look at the tide chart from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association. I'll print one out and I'll go through it and kind of highlight all the best low tides and put that into a little chart for myself that I keep up next to my desk at work. So I always have an idea of when the next low tides are going to be.
Nice, nice. So did you finish your master's degree?
I finished it. Yep, I got it back in 2020.
Oh, nice. Nice. What's the difference between the Masters of Art and Master of Science? Because there is Master of Science in Biology and Master of Arts in Biology.
Masters of Arts is more focused on education and connecting with the community. Mm-hmm. And with science, you're really going into a specific field. I think with most of the science degrees, you're doing a lot of research and analytics and statistics. Right. For me, it's more the softer side of things, more the science the communication. Yeah, exactly.
Right. More with the people. Nice, nice. Well, Luan, thank you so much. This has been really, really fun to learn everything and all about this new world. Where can our listeners find more information about you? You said Instagram?
Yep. If they look at Luanimal, which is just Luanimal, that's my Instagram. Anybody can reach out to me there. I also have a website that I'm terrible at maintaining, but I put a lot of resources for Doc Fowling on there. And that's just naturelookings.com. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I don't update it much, but if you need some information to get started, then I've created it there.
Perfect. 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 How often do you post? I mean, I see you're pretty often, right? I mean, you post daily at least, right?
I try to post daily and I try and take new photos at least once a week. I got to go out this morning, so I got to take another few hundred photos that I'll probably post throughout the next week.
Wow. That's how many photos you take every day that you go out?
That's like a medium day. It could be less if there aren't as many creatures, but a really good day might be up to 1,000 photos. It just depends. It takes me a long time to sort through all of them.
Oh, I'm sure. But that's so, so fun and exciting. Mm-hmm. All right, Luan, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our podcast today. We hope you enjoy learning more about dog fouling, sea sloths, and nudibranchs. If you're interested and want to learn more about the fascinating world of beaches, how to protect them, and hang out with fellow like-minded people, join our membership at www.thebeachacademy.com. And also in there, you can check out our store to find more fun beach merchandise. Thank you and goodbye.